Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
This is Boston Bolt, and so much going on in the world of sports, and all we want is sports back, right? We want basketball back, we want baseball back, we want hockey back. Basketball sounds like they're moving in that direction. Hockey as well. Rick, baseball, it doesn't feel like that. And it's the first time that we've really spoken to anyone that has said of that ilk of an insider within the game of baseball that says I'm more of the belief that it doesn't come back than it does right now. And that's very upsetting.
Oh, of course it's upsetting. Again, I mean, having gone through a similar situation, I mean, we lost the whole season. And the reason why I asked them that question, because it was amazing when we heard it, that an owner will look you in the eye and tell you that he'll actually make more money by not having a season. I mean, that's it. It almost boggles your mind. Like, you can't believe that. But, I mean, he mentioned six teams that kind of feel that way. When it's all said and done, I still feel like they're going to have a season. I just feel like the owners are going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing till they have the players, you know, give back as much as they'll give back, and then they'll come to, you know, some sort of an agreement. I mean, even in the last proposal, you get the money. They won't agree to the money, but the fact that the players have already agreed to an expanded playoffs for 2 years for being mic'd up, like those little things, like they'll just keep taking those little things. They'll take and take and take, knowing full well that, you know, whenever they decide to come to a deal, they can come to a deal.
No, you're right. I guess the owners would be confident that they could come to an agreement because they already know what the players are looking for from a monetary standpoint. Like, they had those negotiations at the end of March, and they know where the players sit. The players want their prorated salaries. If they play half the games, they want half the check. But the owners are going to try to get as much as they can get. The part that concerns me a little bit is that the players came back with a completely different proposal, just the framework of what it would take in order to move forward with a truncated season was completely different than the proposal that the owners threw out 2 weeks ago. And so when you're not negotiating off of the same template, to me, I don't know that these two sides can come together close enough to be able to have a legitimate season where you could justify having a playoff bracket. I don't see how that would be possible.
Yeah, and we keep looking at it. We say, well, you know, it's so far away, and we have weeks and weeks, and there's a drop-dead date of this. The player's proposal says to start June 30th, guys. Rick, that's 29 days from today. How is that humanly possible that they're going to be back and playing games in 4 weeks from today when they don't have a deal right now?
Yeah, but you understand. I mean, you understand what just happened with this new proposal, though, right? Initially, you know, the biggest concern until we heard about the finances was the health and safety of the players, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so, I mean, one of the questions involved with that is, you know, how long will it take these guys to get back to when they're ready to start playing games? You know, we're going to err on the side of caution. It could take 3 weeks, could take 4 weeks. Like, but we want these guys to be ready. So now the players just laid out, it's June 1st. We can start a season a month from now. So we can get ourselves ready that quickly. On top of it, we can go into a season only having, you know, this much time to prepare, and we can, rather than play 82, so we can kind of, I mean, do our best not to be, you know, overloaded with games, we can play over 100, and we'll be fine. So, now we've agreed to play more games. So, I mean, you're given that, the players keep giving these little concessions to the owners, and I think the owner's biggest priority at the moment, and I tried to do some research on this over the weekend, you know, I mentioned it on Friday, just the finances that are involved. The owners want to make sure they have a playoff in a World Series. Mm-hmm. That's why they said the 82 games, because they want to make sure, forget the regular season, we want to get the money, the national revenue TV deal from the playoffs and the World Series, because we don't pay the players during the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, the players will make their, you know, the postseason bonuses, and I think that's close to, you know, all in, right around 100, a little less than 100 million bucks that the entire Major League Baseball players get for the playoffs, which is a tiny number, I would imagine, compared to what the owners make on the national TV deal for the playoffs and the World Series.
Yeah, it's probably a small number, and we know that's what the owners live for, right? In all the professional sports, because you have, you know, that different wage scale once you get to the playoffs, that the owners are going to make a lot more money. And those are the games that mean the most in terms of national TV audience. So, yeah, it makes sense that the owners would prioritize being able to get that in. But it doesn't seem like we're going to get to the point where you're going to have a regular season where you could actually have a legitimate playoff if you're not able to come to some agreement about the regular season compensation. And it just doesn't seem like that's an area that the players want to give in.
At the moment, it doesn't. No, but at the moment, it doesn't. I mean, it's if it ends up being deferrals, if it – I mean, maybe part of it, too, is, you know, owners get to keep the playoff revenue instead of having – you know, the postseason player pool, that $100 million goes, just stays with the owners. I mean, that could be a concession just to make sure we get our salaries. But, I mean, the owners always win in these situations because they have the money, they have the means, and they also have the luxury of time. Like, the owners will eventually get whole.
The fans always lose.
Yeah, the fans end up losing, and so do the players. But, I mean, that's when the owners have something they want to get, they usually, for the most part, will get it. And the players left to take is to try to get as much as they can get. And I think at a certain point, cooler heads prevail because of the long-term ramifications, and then something does get done.
All right, well, they're playing a dangerous game with the strongest players union out of any of the team professional sports.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not as strong as it was, though. See, it's not as strong as it was. The last CBA did not go great for the players.
Yeah, but do we want to look at it through the lens of the other CBAs and the other sports that players have signed?
No, but I think if the owners, I mean, the owners smell blood, man. Like, the owners in their minds won the last CBA negotiation. So once they get a taste, you know what I mean? Now they want more.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The players are not going to allow a salary cap to be implemented.
No.
Not with the backdrop of the CBA negotiations in 2021. That's the part of it that won't happen. So even though the owners might feel like they're getting the players to make all of these concessions for the 2020 season, you can rest assured that Tony Clark and the MLBPA are not going to let that happen. Because, I mean, Bradford Doolittle on ESPN.com did a great job of outlining the difficulties that baseball is going to have in comparison to the NBA and the NHL coming back. And one of the key differences is how the salary caps are tied to the revenue that the owners and the players split. I mean, so anytime you have a change in the revenue that's being generated by the sport for whatever reason, it makes it a little bit easier to adjust the compensation that the players are going to get. But you don't have that with baseball. And so when you look at it from the players' perspective, even though this is unprecedented times with the coronavirus and the economic shutdown in this country, this is one of those things that the players are not going to give on. And I don't think they should. And I think that's where the stalemate really, really hits that impasse. Like that's what this is all about. Like the owner's trying to push to get that. And I don't see that happening under the current leadership of the MLBPA.
No, and I don't either. And I'm not saying that they're going to be, I mean, that the Major League Baseball owners will have a salary cap. I don't think that that's going to happen. And I think they probably realize that's not going to happen. That'll be, you know, the sticking point for the Players Association, which I completely understand.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that the owners and Rob Manfred probably realize that as well. And so if you know that and you already have an idea because you negotiated in March what it would take to get a deal done, like we can always go back to that, then all the things that you would like to get moving forward, you're going to try to get now. Like, we'd like to have players mic'd up. Well, we didn't even have to say it. They brought that.
They offered it up, yeah.
Exactly right. We got expanded playoffs. Check, we'll take that. It's like, I would have rather Major League, the union, not even come back with a counterproposal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, don't give anything else back. And just stand firm. Listen, hey, we were offended by your initial offer. Come back with something that we can work with.
Yeah, that's the number one rule in negotiating, 101, right? Speak first, die first. Mm-hmm. If you're the first one to give and to start making concessions, then the other party is just going to lay back and see how long you're willing to go before you show that you're willing to give something else up. And I think that's the position that the owners have taken, just because billionaires know that they have the luxury of being able to outlast millionaires and thousandaires. But as far as the owners, if they were sincere about trying to get to some agreement and trying to show legitimate losses for their business, then they would open up the books to the players and show the different revenue streams that aren't going to be available to them because they wouldn't be able to have fans in ballparks. But that's not what the baseball owners are doing. And so I don't understand why the court of public opinion is siding with the billionaires over the players. It seems like what the players are asking for is fair.
But it's always going to be that way, though. It's always going to be that way. I mean, look at the outrage you should have over Lerner of the Nationals, who said he's worth $5+ billion, and he's pinching pennies about minor league players getting $100 a week.
But time out. It's a terrible look. I agree. But that's
it's
not
awful.
How. But that's not how these owners do business. I mean, his what he's worth personally has nothing to do with what his team is worth or how much revenue his team generates.
Well, you know what? Maybe in this time when things are so dire, you should think a little bit more about other people when you have so much money.
Dave, he's a billionaire. He didn't get to where he was at financially by thinking about other people's needs.
And the argument, too, from the owners would be, we'll open up our books if you want to start splitting revenues. If you want to have a salary cap, feel free. You can look at our books, see what we're divvying up. But until you agree to that, we're not going to show you our books. You want this to be a marketplace system, then okay, you know, we won't show you what we need to show you. You guys can just guess how much money we make. I mean, that's what it is. You don't think that, listen, the owners are, here's what the owners are great at, right? Because there's not as many owners as there are players, is solidarity. Mm-hmm. And they have certain writers, certain people that they leak certain things out to because they want us all to know it. You think it's by happenstance that Buster only knows of six teams that would like to gas the whole season?
No.
That's out there for a reason.
Of course. They leak that to him so that becomes public and the players get worried about it.
Exactly right. Because, I mean, and you kind of believe it, too, because they're billionaires. Like, okay, yeah, you can settle the season. That makes sense. I can't as a player. I'm just gonna throw away a whole season of my career, however much money that is, just gone out the window. That's not an easy decision to make when you're faced with it. Trust me, I've been there.
Oh, it's not an easy decision to make, Rick. And you're talking about the career mortality of a professional athlete versus how long one of these owners can have control of the team. Like, the owner can own the team for the rest of his life. If you're a player, you only have so many years that you can play the game at this level. So many years you can monetize what essentially becomes your life work. You're going to give up a year of that for what? For the interests of the union and for the interests of future players? See, that's when you start getting into the conversation about the owner's tactics being divisive toward the MLBPA and them throwing out the wage scale and saying that the players that are paid the most are going to take the biggest hits to their salaries. That's how a guy like Mike Trout, who's supposed to make $36 million, ends up only making $6 or $7 million under the owner's proposal, whereas the minimum salary guys pretty much get their entire check. Prorated, right. Of course.
We heard about the players' proposal. Jeff Passan was on SportsCenter late last night. How the owners will view the most recent proposal from the players.
MLB is going to reject this proposal. Right. It's just an inevitability, like it was inevitable that the players rejected MLB's proposal on Tuesday that included the pretty drastic pay cuts for players up and down. But the issue is going to be on the owner side. Now, there is a group of owners. It's a small group at this point, but there's a group that has been fairly vocal about there not being a 2020 season and what the benefits would be to that. And the question is this proposal going to give them more ammunition perhaps going forward and being able to bring some others onto their side? Or are they going to see this from the players as an olive branch saying, hey, let's find somewhere to meet in the middle? We've got a pandemic going on right now. We've got a crisis going on across the country where cities are burning. And are we really going to be the ones who can't come to a deal right now? It's just more for baseball to consider than it has already. And if it wants to be the first professional sport in America to come back, then this week is going to be absolutely seminal.
Yep, there you hear it. I mean, this is the huge week, and this is the way people are going to feel, Rick, is that if you don't come back, you're spitting in the face of the fan who is so desperate for the sport now, and you're not going to come back. It's such an awful look.
Well, I think the owners realize that. I mean, there may be teams, I probably do believe that, there are teams that would rather not have the season because they won't lose as much money, but I think the vast majority want to play because it is an opportunity. And I think a vast majority of the players want to play because it's an opportunity to make whatever the money ends up being. But, I mean, more importantly, you know, there are teams like the Yankees that are poised to compete for a championship. And you want to throw that away when you have only a certain amount of years to actually do that? And to seeing how the players, I mean, how David Price, you know, how the Washington Nationals are rallying around the minor leaguers, I mean, speaks to the mindset of a lot of the players. Like, when push comes to shove, you know, I would rather probably make the $9 million if I'm Mike Trout and make sure the guys that don't make as much money as me actually get paid than to keep pushing this where we miss out on the season. Because there'll be long-term ramifications for the players, too. I mean, let's not forget a couple of years ago how free agency went for the players and how long it took guys to get paid.
Yep.
Like the
stars of the game took them
all. But the owners control the money.
Paid.
Players realize that too. We can have we can hold firm now, but I mean, at the end of the day, the ones who sign the check are the owners, and they can choose when, you know, how much money they're going to pay these guys in free agency as well.
No, you're absolutely right about that, Rick, but you also just mentioned about Mike Trout and wanting him to give a little more if it were you, because you would want to make sure that the rest of the guys are closer to being whole. The one thing that I will say to that is it's a shame that the owners of these teams are putting players in that situation. Just to echo the sentiments of Buster Olney when we had him on the show an hour ago, just like the fact that the owners are making the decisions that they're making in terms of being able to cut payroll and releasing the minor league players and slashing 401ks and firing club employees. To me, it's all wrong. Like they don't have to take that position, but they're doing that because that's what's in the best interest of the bottom line. And to me, we're just in a time and space where the decisions that you make shouldn't be dictated by your bottom line. It should be dictated from a humane standpoint about doing right by the people that work in your organization. You talk about how the valuations of these teams have skyrocketed over the past decade. Well, it's actually people within those organizations, including the players, that are working toward building those franchises up so they can be valued at what they're valued at today. To me, this is one of those years where you give a little back to your employees just to make sure that people can survive.
And it almost doesn't feel like either side gave, right? Like the owners come out with this incredible proposal and the players come out with something that couldn't be more on the other side of things. Like we can't meet even somewhere close to the middle to have a legitimate negotiation.
Well, Dave, the players are employees and the players are the product. So I can understand why they wouldn't want to give, because the players realize you have a finite period of time to make as much money as you can before you're going to be told to leave the organization or to leave the sport. The owners don't have a timeline. The owners can own these teams forever. And if they don't own the team forever, they're going to sell the team and make $1 billion or more, like the former owner of the Marlins did. So, I mean, that to me is just the part of it that doesn't feel right. And I think more people should focus on that. When we start talking about the criticism and why baseball hasn't plotted out a course for return like the other sports has, I think we need to focus more of our outrage toward the owners and not the players.
But that's exactly what makes us as players susceptible to bad deals and why athletes get preyed on. I don't care what the deal is. It could be a contract. It could be, you know, investing your money. How many of those stories have you heard? Professional athletes making bad financial investments.
Yep.
Because we let our emotions, we let our emotions dictate our decisions a lot of the time, as opposed to, you know, these billionaires who take emotion out of it. We sit here and praise Bill Belichick all the time for what?
Being emotionless. Being able to cut a guy who's been a great player and has a lot of value to the team, or a lot of, you know, like intrinsic value to the team. He'll just move on from him.
Because that is good business. That's what they're focused on right now. It's not people's feelings, not doing the right thing. It's what's in the best interest of their business.
Well, I guess my point is, I wish, and I guess I'm pie in the sky, and this is unrealistic, that as we sit here now, with what's going on in the world, that they could, just for a little bit, look to get this game on more than business at this moment.
They're not going to show weakness. I mean, you act surprised. I mean, how many times have we just sat here? I mean, we're talking, you know, to Mike T about, you know, Dak Prescott's contract, or we're talking to him about, you know, Pat Mahomes' contract. How would you approach this as a GM? Well, I'd sit down with Pat Mahomes and just, you know, let him realize that if I pay you this much money, we can't afford this, this, and this. Now putting it on the player to manage your salary cap, is that fair to the player? No, it's not, but that's what they do. That's how they work, man. That's how they get the best possible deal for themselves. It's not about doing the right thing for them.
I know, but maybe I'm just naive.
No, you know what, Rick? You're not wrong. I guess it shouldn't be surprising knowing how the owners operate. I guess the thing that's surprising is that in the kind of year that we're having, that the court of public opinion would still side with the owners when it's clear that the owners are in a better position to give than the players are.
It'll always side with the owners. That will never stop.
Because it was up to the fan right now, regardless of how much money they were getting paid, they'd much rather be playing baseball, hockey, or basketball. than what they're doing now.
I get it, Rick, but think about all of the fans of baseball that currently find themselves out of a job. I mean, how many of them would wish that their employer, because their employer has the means, would be able to keep them on or be able to continue to pay their check even though the businesses are shut down? Just these baseball owners, what these franchises make and how much they're worth, they're in a position to leverage all of the resources that they have to make sure that they can have a season. And they're choosing to do that in the interest of profitability. And to me, this year shouldn't be about profitability at all.
Yeah, but Chris, I don't think people are looking at it that way. I don't think they look at what's going on with baseball and say to themselves, you know, I wish the person I work for, you know, had the means to keep me on, and the owner should do the same thing. They just want to see baseball. That's what they want.
Yeah.
Like, find a way to figure it out. If it means you're going to make $9 million instead of, you know, $36 million or $37 million, you're still making $9 million bucks.
I think just go play because I want to see it. Just go get it done. Just go get it done. I don't care. I don't even pick a side. Just go get it done.
And
meanwhile,
I think
the owners are making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Of course. Of course. Rick, I think we need a little Cuddle Mary trash in our lives desperately today.
Yeah, we need something. I mean, I'm at the point. It didn't work the first time. I may try it. I may go Mike Arruzzioni miracle style and just Rick DiPietro, Winthrop, Massachusetts, and just get me to 2021 at this point. I can't even tell you.
I can't wait for New Year's of December of this year. So I know you're big on music during our little segments. You're huge on that, I've heard.
Well, it's the segment integrity, really, is what I'm focused on.
I know.
I think music is a big key to that. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
I do, and guess what we have for you for Culinary Trash.
Nice.
Oh, here yeah. We there we go.
A little dating game action. You want to hear something crazy, too? I mean, just with what's going on and everything else. I mean, I'm doing dishes yesterday, and I go to put the dish, you know, where it's supposed to dry, put it on, and it's a, I mean, I should have cleaned it up before I started doing the dishes. Glass drops. I go to grab the glass, catch the glass, I'm not paying attention, and the pan drops at the same time.
Oh,
and
dear.
Yeah, broke the toe. Broken toe.
You broke a toe?
Oh, yeah, broken toe.
Well, there's really not much you can do for that.
Nothing. Just stare at the, it looks like a breakfast sausage.
Is there anything worse than the moment that you either stub your toe or drop something on that toe and you have like a nanosecond of it doesn't hurt quite yet, but you know in a quarter second you're going to feel pain like you've never felt before?
Yeah, that was not the case. The second the pan fell
it
on the
immediate.
Toe.
Immediate?
Yeah, it was immediate. Oh, yeah, yeah, this was, you knew the second
pain.
It happened. You could almost hear it break. You can feel it.
Hopping around pain.
Yeah, you can feel it snap.
All right, here we go. CMT.
Let's cheer everyone up.
Yeah.
A little CMT action. I decided to go with this on the heels of, we didn't get into this last week, but DeAndre Hopkins, which I didn't necessarily love. I got his point. I wish he was more focused on if I had Deshaun Watson for my entire career. Could you imagine what my numbers were? He mentioned, you know, if I had Drew Brees or Matt Ryan. So I decided to go with NFL skill positions for CMT today.
Nice.
So in honor of DeAndre Hopkins, we'll start with him in the names in question. I'm going to give you DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas, or one Julio Jones.
All right, Chris, why don't you start us out?
Right now, I don't know how you couldn't take Michael Thomas. The guy is a machine. Like, I understand he's playing with a Hall of Fame quarterback, but that doesn't take away from Michael Thomas's greatness. I mean, the guy had 149 grabs last year on 185 targets. People know that they were throwing the ball to Michael Thomas, and they still couldn't stop him. He obliterated the single-season catch record set by Marvin Harrison. I don't know how you could go with anybody over Michael Thomas as the best wide receiver in the NFL.
So you're going to marry Michael Thomas then?
Yes, I'm going to marry Michael Thomas.
If
I'm going to
socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm going to cuddle DeAndre Hopkins.
Bombs and fallacious seeds.
Exactly. And as wrong as I feel like I am for doing this, I'm gonna have to trash Julio.
Firm is garbage. Look at this garbage.
It's a tough category today, Dave.
I gotta be honest, the music is really winning here. yeah, I'm gonna agree with Chris right down the line. This is a very difficult question. Michael Thomas, best receiver in football, and here's the thing. Who's the second receiver on that team? I mean, Ted Ginn? They don't even have a second receiver. So he's
Emmanuel
awesome.
Sanders now.
Yeah. Well, now, but he hasn't played with him in the past, so he might even be that much better moving into another season. I'm going to marry Michael Thomas. I'm going to cuddle up to DeAndre Hopkins, and although it does feel sacrilegious, and it is, I will trash Julio Jones.
Look at this garbage!
All right, here we go. Let's go with the tight ends now. I'm going to give you George Kittle. I'm going to give you Zach Ertz, and I'm going to give you Travis Kelce.
Kittle, Ertz, and Kelce.
Go ahead, Dave. I'll give you honors.
All right. The first one to me is easy, actually. I think George Kittle is the most complete tight end in the NFL. So I'll happily walk down the aisle and marry him.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I would. I think his blocking combined with his receiving, the integral part he is to that offense, he's the best tight end in football, bar none in my mind. Second one is hard. I don't like the Eagles, so Travis Kelce will be my choice. I will cuddle Travis Kelce.
Cut,
trash, whatever you'd like to call it, one Zach Ertz.
I'm going to need you to be better.
Look at this garbage!
I'm going to need you to be better. I'm going to need you to focus now on just this so we can actually play the sounder because you're screwing up the integrity of this game.
Wow.
Is choose who you'll marry, say why, stop, so we can play the sounder. And then we'll go to the next one.
I got dating game music. I got a lot going on. I'm overwhelmed. Let me do it again. Can I get a retry here?
No.
I won't give you explanation. I won't give
No. No.
Why?
You can try with the next one. We're going to go to Chris. Chris, Kittle, Ertz, Kelce. Give it to me.
All right. I'm going to roll with Dave on trashing Zach Ertz. I just don't think that Zach Ertz is in the same class as the other two guys that we have in this conversation. Now, as far as who I'm going to marry, I'm going to go the other direction. Dave wanted to go with George Kittle as the marry because he's a complete tight end. I really don't care about him being a complete tight end. I care about this guy being a difference maker and being impactful. And even though George Kittle can have more impact on the running game, I just feel like as far as a threat in the passing game, Travis Kelce is better than any other tight end in football. He's got four straight 1,000-yard receiving seasons for a reason, not to mention coming off of a Super Bowl run. So I am going to marry Travis Kelce.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
And I am going to cuddle up to George Kittle.
Bombs and fallacious seeds.
See, that was well done, Candy.
It was
perfectly timed. Well done. Thank you very much.
Well, you know what? I didn't do well. My teammate did. I'm the kind of teammate that can tip my cap and say good job by Chris. I'm proud of him. Good job.
Okay, here we go. Final one, because I was told to tighten this thing up. I got plenty more, but I was told to tighten it up, so we got one last one here.
Tighten.
We're going to go running backs. I'm going to give you Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, and Ezekiel Elliott. All right.
I think it's crazy that we're talking about running backs and we're not including the 2019 rushing champ. So disrespectful to Derrick Henry.
Yeah, Derrick Henry. It's true.
Had him. He actually has his own. He actually has his own category. This is more like, you know, multi. More like
satellite back. Satellite.
Exactly
player?
Right. Exactly gotcha. Right.
Okay.
All right. All right. What do you want to do, Chris? You want to go?
No, I think I got honors, right? Because I gave you honors with the tight ends. Yeah, I'm going to go with on the all satellite back team. I'm going to roll with Christian McCaffrey, man. I think he's special seeing what he did last year with really not a whole lot of support around him. No Cam Newton. He's rolling with backup quarterbacks and guys at the skill position players for Carolina that really aren't huge difference makers. He is the focal point of their offense. He's the guy that everybody's trying to stop, and they still couldn't stop him last year. So I got to marry Christian McCaffrey. Although
if it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Although the cost of Christian McCaffrey moving forward is a lot more expensive. In terms of the cuddle buddy, I'm going to do it. I'm going to cuddle with Saquon Barkley. I'm going to do it. And as much as I love Ezekiel Elliott, I can't ignore what I saw from him last year and the lack of productivity after he got paid. Seems like he's got all that fresh cash slowing him down. So I'm going to roll with Saquon Barkley. I think he's going to be hungry to come back, bounce back from his sophomore slump. So I'm going to cuddle Saquon, and I am going to trash Zeke Elliott.
Look at this garbage!
All right. All I hope to do is just appropriately time it so that the drops can be played. I'm ready to go. I am going to marry Christian McCaffrey.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
It's hard to argue that he's not the most complete running back in the NFL. And again, talent-wise on that offense, there's not a ton. I mean, they ask him to do everything, and he does it. So that, to me, is somewhat easy, actually, right now. I agree with you, Chris. I mean, and also for the fact that Ezekiel Elliott has a dominant offensive line, I'm going to cuddle right into Saquon Barkley.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
Yeah, I think that he is going to have a tremendous season. He is explosive. And it's somewhat easy, and then for me, let me just trash push to the side Ezekiel Elliott.
Firmly. This garbage! Look at this garbage!
And I don't like no.
All right, let me give you. Let me give you one more quickly, and just make sure this is tight, right? Because I don't want to get yelled at.
Please, okay. Tight is okay. Very important. Yes.
So I'm going to go to just a now straight running back, right? I'm going to give you Derrick Henry, who won the rushing title. I'm going to give you, and this may be who Dave picks. I'm going to give you Chubb you up a little bit, and then I'm going to give you Josh Jacobs.
All right. Well, I mean, this to me, the marriage is easy. I'll marry Derrick Henry.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I mean, this, I think I disagree with that. Sensational. I mean, he gave you performances that we've really almost never seen in the NFL and not even recent years at all. I mean, he's sensational. I know it's fun, Chubb, so I will cuddle. Cleveland's own.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I like Josh Jacobs, but I think that's somewhat easy for me. I will trash him.
Wow.
After
Firm
wow.
Look at this garbage.
I don't think I could disagree with you more.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chris, you're up.
I'm with Rick on that one. I disagree with you on trashing Josh Jacobs. I'm going to cuddle Josh Jacobs,
bombs and
even though he didn't have the yardage that Nick Chubb or Derrick Henry did. I mean, he was right up there in terms of yards per game. He was third in the National Football League in rushing yards per game, and I only look to him to ascend. Plus, I believe in the character of the individual. And in sports, when you're trying to project, you know, productivity long term, you have to factor in character. And for me, there is no better character in terms of good person in the National Football League than Josh Jacobs. So I'm going to cuddle him. I'm going to marry Derrick Henry.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Even though the Tennessee Titans don't seem to want to marry him, they're giving him a franchise tag rather than a long-term deal. But what I saw him do at the end of the regular season and on into the postseason, leading that team to an AFC championship game, you can't ignore his impact on his team winning. Not just what the offense does, but what he does for their defense and keeping them off the field. So to me, Derrick Henry is special, and it's too bad that we don't value running backs in this league at that level, because he certainly is one of those guys that's a difference maker who makes the entire team better. And then, yeah, I'm going to trash Nick Chubb.
Burn this garbage! Look at this garbage!
And there you go, fellas. That is a Monday edition of Cuddle, Marry, Trash.
And I got to be honest, it was quick, it was rapid, it was tight, it had music. You could want no more from what that segment just gave you.
That's all I was looking for, Dave. No, listen, that's all I was looking for.
No, it's like you go to a movie, you laugh, you cry, you felt good when you leave. I think you feel the exact same way about CMT.
Take the stick in the face and you get back to your business.
Everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. Chris, you saw part two of Lance last night, right?
Absolutely, Dave.
Boy, these things are so well done. All these 30 for 30s are so well done. And as I kind of thought, part two looked a lot worse for Lance Armstrong than part one.
No, it did. But the one thing that I will say, Dave, is that he didn't back away from any of it. And when they asked him point blank questions, he gave them straightforward answers. Like the one thing that he said that he regrets the most throughout that process was the way that he treated their athletic trainer, Emma O'Reilly. And some of the things that he said about her publicly and privately, smearing her name, her reputation in the industry. I thought that was the right thing to do, you know, because you never know how all of these headlines affect people on a personal level. It's clear to see the impact on their professional careers. And when you start talking about the damage that's done in their personal lives, I think that's That's important to acknowledge, and Lance did that. You know, he was honest, Dave. I mean, he talked about, you know, him doping and taking the EPO and being questioned about it and all the rumors. He said he had no choice but to go after those people that were saying those things because essentially everything that he had built, the Live Strong Foundation and all of those, all of the things that came along with that, like that was all based on the work that he did on the bike. And so he had to protect, his career. He had to protect that persona. And that's why he was so aggressive, all the while knowing that he was wrong doing it. It doesn't make it right, but at least there is some contrition in terms of, you know, how he went about his business and the fallout from the things that he did do.
I just think at that point, I mean, what, Dave, I mean, you tell me, I mean, what do you do at that point?
I mean, I guess you're right. I don't know. I'd like to think, maybe it's naive of me again, I'd like to think that I'm a better person. There's a lot of people that are better than that, that they wouldn't go on the attack and drag people's good name through the mud when they know they're lying about it, though.
Yeah, but to Chris's point, everything he had built up, I mean, you start talking about, you know, the Live Strong Foundation, all the great work that they were doing. I mean, that completely goes out the window. If he admits to doping and to cheating. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, I mean, you get a glimpse into what, you know, his feelings when they brought up Marco Pantani and right. how he was, you know, cast aside once they found out he was doping. So, I mean, for him, there was one clear path, and that was deny till you die. That was, you know, fight it with everything you can and just keep your fingers crossed that no one ever finds out. The one thing I didn't like and actually really bothered me was when Tyler Hamilton kind of insinuated that it was Lance Armstrong that got him busted.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I didn't like that.
Yeah.
I can understand, like, the whole team dynamic. Like, we're all in this thing together, and, you know, we're all doing it, so we all have to stick together. That rubbed me the wrong way. You can't be the one – I mean, you can't be the face of the team preaching all this stuff to your teammates.
And then be the whistleblower on your teammate?
Exactly right.
That was awful.
Because you don't like that all of a sudden he's having success. I didn't like that at all.
Well, listen, Lance Armstrong didn't want him to have success leaving the team. I think that's what it came down to. If you're going to leave the team, then you're fair game. You're an opponent of mine, and I'm not going to try to be friends with you, no matter what our past relationship was. And it just shows you how cutthroat he was about being able to protect his position at the top of the sport, man. I mean, you had people from the UCI protecting him because he was the cash cow. He was the golden goose, and everybody recognized the attention that he had brought to the sport of cycling, and along with that attention was a lot more money. And so a lot of people had a vested interest in protecting Lance Armstrong, and Lance wasn't shy about wielding that power over everybody in and around the sport.
I mean, he's what made it relevant, right?
Totally.
Yeah, they were talking about when you would go to work for the Postal Services team, how you essentially worked for Lance Armstrong. He was the boss. He was the one that was in charge, and you were there to serve him.
He was cycling. I mean, Lance Armstrong, the sport was nothing. It was irrelevant. The Tour de France almost, you know, ceased to exist back in the day. And he revitalized the entire sport. So there's no doubt about it. And his story was one of the ages. It's a shame that he did what he did.
Yeah, but that is, I mean, we always say it, and, you know, it's probably true. I mean, the NFL is too big to fail. But, I mean, there are occasions where it doesn't matter how big you are. I mean, you can fail. And yeah. The amount of hubris at the end, too. Like, you just, you know, I'm going to go back. And everyone's like, no, you probably shouldn't go back. This is not a good idea. Like, let's not taunt them now. And he's like, no, I'm going back. I mean, it's like sometimes enough is enough. Like, you got to know when to be done with it. And he didn't know.
No.
But I will say this, Rick. It wasn't all bad. Because some of the stories that you heard from the people that the foundation ended up helping, like the woman that talked about, you know, having cancer and wanting wanted to have a pregnancy and the fertility, fertility treatments and being able to subsidize that through funds that the foundation had raised and being able to pay for that. Like that was to me one of the positives that came out of what was an ugly situation with Lance Armstrong's career. Like you can't discount the good work that the foundation was doing.
Did great work for years, raised hundreds of millions of dollars.
Still doing it, still doing it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were the first ones to raise money for fertility treatments for cancer patients. I didn't realize they were the first ones to establish that program, but they were, and they're still doing it today.
They were cutting edge. They were completely cutting edge. So certainly if you haven't seen it, worth watching, and I know we all have a lot of time on our hands now. Today on ESPN Daily, Timberwolves head coach Ryan Saunders shares what he's learned from his team after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis and why white sports figures like himself must speak out as allies. That's ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.